Blog Talk Radio.
UR Tennis is an advocacy group for underrepresented tennis participants. These participants would include players, parents, coaches, and the learners of all racial minorities, all social class minorities, all sexual minorities, all age-related minorities, and anyone who seems to have been forgotten. Our mission is to act as the voice for tennis. We are striving to bring forth programs, contests, issues, news, education, and philanthropy that will benefit all in tennis. We are seeking active participation from populations that believe they have an interest in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We want to expand our outreach royally, regionally, nationally, and worldly. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to continuously be talked about, and we will pursue this idea relentlessly.
Welcome to Parenting Aces on the UR Tennis Station on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Lisa Stone. I'm your host today, and I want to welcome our guest, Matt Dectus, who is the author of a new book called The Perfect Tennis Parent. And it's really very interesting how things seem to work. Today, for those of you who are celebrating, is Rosh Hashanah, and it's the Jewish New Year celebration. And in our service at our synagogue today, my rabbi was talking about parenting and how to be a better parent. And all I kept thinking about was, how does that relate to tennis, and how can I relate that to my tennis parenting? And his whole sermon today was what we need to do as parents to be better at it. And the bottom line that he said is that to be better parents, we need to be better partners to our spouses or life partners. And by exhibiting good partnership behavior to our children, we then are better parents to them, which I thought was very interesting. So with that thought in the back of our minds, I would like to introduce Matt. Matt, hello and welcome to the show today.
Hey, Lisa. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
We're so glad you're here and so looking forward to hearing more about your new book, The Perfect Tennis Parent, and how you came up with the idea to actually sit down and put all of this information on paper. But first, before we get into the book, can you tell our listeners a little bit about your background in the tennis world and what you're currently doing?
Yeah, definitely, and I just want to take a second to thank you for having me on, and what a great concept to have a blog and a website and all of the things you do, a radio show dedicated to tennis parenting. I think it's an area, as we talked about, that probably doesn't get enough love, enough attention, and I know a lot of parents are out there looking to get better, and that's what it's all about. So congrats on that, and thank you again. Yeah, for me, right, what I do is I'm a tennis director at a club in Cincinnati, Ohio. I run a program with 16 courts, and we've got a great facility here. And the club's name is Five Seasons Sports Club. And I also run an academy up here, and we train a lot of high-performance players, a lot of college players. We've had about 150 college players go on to play college tennis in the last decade or so, and had a couple of professional players, and so that's kind of what I do on a day in and day out basis, and really enjoy it. And then from there, deal with a lot of the issues that come up with competitive tennis and developing players, and that's kind of how I got into the book.
Very cool, very cool. And I understand you're sort of a new dad, but not so new anymore, right?
Well, I mean, it's all relative. I've got a 2-year-old. He's getting out of his crib now, and we're figuring that out. So I'm learning as I go, and definitely haven't done the tennis parenting route yet, but I've coached a lot of kids. But I realize how hard it can be.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Well, as a new parent, you're already experiencing kind of a precursor to the stuff that those of us with teenagers and older kids live through. I've decided that the toddler years are just the teen years without the language skills yet. So it's great preparation. So let's jump into the book, and we already actually have a caller on the line. So I'm going to just ask the caller if you could please hold on for 1 second because I want to give Matt a couple minutes to talk a little bit about the book, and then we will take your call. So please be patient with us, caller. But, Matt, okay, so the name of the book, The Perfect Tennis Parent. Okay, got to ask, is there really such a thing?
Well, that's funny because, as I wrote it and I asked some coaches to contribute, a lot of them were like, yeah, there is no perfect tennis parent, you know, and a couple parents too. There is no perfect tennis parent. And I think really I put kind of on the cover, in the land of what I call tennis utopia, there is a perfect tennis parent. And I think really what I define as a perfect tennis parent, and I've got it right on the cover, is a parent who is always working hard to get better. And I think we really teach that culture to our kids when we train them, that we're process-oriented players and people. And I think that's an important life skill to teach kids. And I think for parents, it's no different. And I think for coaches, it's no different. And all of us are just trying to get better. And if you're really trying to do that, as obviously, Lisa, you are, and you're promoting with your vehicles here, I think you're a perfect tennis parent.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm not sure my perfect tennis playing son would agree with you, but but I'll take it. I will take it. So let me just, I don't want to keep our caller holding too long, so I'm going to let them jump in real quick, and then you and I will get back. Hang on 1 second. Caller, are you there?
Yes, Lisa. Thanks for having me on. Can you hear me, Lisa?
I can hear you. Welcome to the show.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. It's been great so far. I'm looking forward to listening to the rest of it. I'm calling from Cincinnati, Ohio, and I have kind of a question for Matt and you both, really. In the last few months, I have a 10-year-old girl who's playing a lot of tennis, and it's been really great experience all the way around. But there's been a couple of incidences, really, where it's gotten at tournaments where, even with 10-year-old girls, where parents have really, it's gotten to the point where they've gotten into such heated arguments, and this happened twice at two tournaments I was at, where the parents were arguing so badly that they had to go out in the parking lot, and literally at one of them they were going to call the police, and it was, it got into, like, you know, it started all with, like, loud cheering and interacting with the parents on the during the match, and then there were insults going back and forth, and people said something to the wife, and then it went crazy. And I was always under the impression, and this is what I would love you guys to comment on, I was always under the impression that when you sent your daughter out on the court, that at that point the communication was kind of supposed to stop and you're supposed to let the kids play. And I had a situation the other day where my daughter, I knew the score was wrong, and I knew that it was, you know, 30-30, and she said it was 15-40, but I kept my mouth shut because if she can't figure that out, something she's got to learn. And I see so much interaction with parents and kids on the court, and I think it's a huge problem, and I don't know what we can do to kind of get that under control. So that was my question, and just would love to hear your guys' thoughts.
Well, Matt, you wanna jump in first? Because I certainly have my opinion on that.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that, you know, for me, the first thing would just be, you know, ideally you get in these tournaments where you got these directors that are kind of on the issues, but sometimes due to the reality of the club business, you can't always have that. So I think I'd pass it to you, Lisa, and just see what you think. Like, as a parent, how do you handle that? If you're in that situation or in that environment, and what do you do? I mean, that's kind of a tough one.
It is tough, and unfortunately, it's not an uncommon situation, I'm afraid. And you're just getting started with your daughter, you know, being 10 years old. We've been around it a few years and have even heard of parents getting into fistfights, actual fistfights, where the police have come and arrested one or both. So, I mean, it you know, sadly, in some situations, really can escalate out of control. But, I mean, for me personally, when I've been, you know, part of that, well, not part of it, but when I've witnessed it or when it's involved a match that my son's part of, the first thing I typically do is try to go find an official. And you have to hope there's at least one official on the site that is going to take control of the situation, which I have to warn you, that's not always the case. I mean, a lot of times the officials are, a little bit older. They really don't want to get involved. And so, you know, then you have to kind of go up the food chain. And if you can't get the official to take action, the next step is to try to find the tournament director. And if the tournament director doesn't do what is necessary, at that point, you know, I think the best advice is to remove yourself. And if you feel like your child's in a precarious situation or a dangerous situation, I mean, you know, it's a tennis match, and you get your child out of a dangerous situation before you worry about the outcome of a tennis match. So I've never seen anybody have to do that, but I have definitely gone to the tournament directors and have then actually called or emailed the head of my junior competition committee in my section to report those kinds of things. And, you know, the onus, unfortunately, the onus is on us to make sure that the USTA is following up and doing what's necessary to prevent those types of things from repeating themselves. They're not always perfect about it, though. And a lot of times it takes tenacity on the part of the parent to follow up and follow up again and follow up yet again to find out what the outcome is. But as you go to more and more tournaments, you'll see and you'll hear from other parents. I mean, there's some parents that have that reputation, and you just, when you look at the draw, you hope to God that your kid's not in that kid's section and doesn't have to deal with it. But I mean, you know, it's just, sadly, it's part of what junior tennis has become. And I think junior sports in general, I don't think it's limited to tennis, but, you know, it's just part of what we have to deal with. And I think that's why, you know, having books like the one Matt has just published and having websites, hopefully, like Parenting Aces will be helpful, though I suspect that the people that really need the information aren't the ones necessarily seeking it out. So, you know, short of walking around with a billboard, you know, at these tournaments saying, hey, are you one of these crazy people? You need to go buy this book or visit this website. I'm not sure what we can do, but I feel for you, and all I can tell you is the lessons your daughter is going to learn by watching you remain calm in these situations and you know, stick to your guns in terms of not breaking rules and not acting like a crazy person out there are far more valuable than a win or a loss on the tennis court. So I hope that helps.
Oh, thank you. I thank you. That's a great answer. I appreciate it. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks for calling in.
All right, bye-bye.
I love that last point you made, because I think that's really what it comes down to. You get in these environments, whether they're peachy or hostile, and you can learn a lot from them just by how you handle them as a parent. And I think the kids really, you know, everybody will tell you, kids learn more by watching, and they're going to learn by how you deal with that situation. That's a really good point.
Yeah, well, it's easier said than done sometimes, because some of these – you know, situations get out of control very quickly, as I'm sure you've experienced a lot too, Matt. And, you know, it's tough as a parent, and it's tough when it's your baby out there and, you know, you don't want them distracted, and you certainly don't want them taken advantage of. But the rules say that it's on the kids, and we parents are supposed to sit there with our mouths closed and try to maintain neutral body language and neutral facial expressions and enjoy the process of watching our kids develop on the tennis court, which, as you know, is tough. It's really tough. So talk to me about what you learned in the process of writing this book. I mean, I've read the book. I found some really very, very insightful and helpful information in it. And I love that you interviewed parents of some of the current professionals on the circuit. I just, you know, I think it's great for me to see that even those parents of these pros that are earning a living playing the sport have the same issues that, you know, little old me has down here in Atlanta.
Yeah, you know, I think that's really, you kind of hit it on the head. What I learned, probably most importantly, is, you know, I think you learn this more as you educate about a lot of topics, which is just a lot of people share similar goal sets and mindsets about this stuff. And, you know, as I talk to some world-class coaches that have coached, you know, every player that you can think of in the world, and, and then you know, some parents of some very accomplished players. We mentioned John Isner in there before, his mom, and other. I had a real fun time interviewing Clark Goldstein, the dad of Paul Goldstein, who's one of the most successful junior players in the history of the USTA, and was up to about 58 in the world or something. And they just kept coming back with a lot of the, you know, their own stories, but with the same type of concepts about trying to enjoy the process, not getting caught up in the moment too often, not making it completely about results, you know, teaching life skills through the sport of tennis. And I think that was refreshing and encouraging to me. And like you, we've talked about, you run across a lot of the bad environments and situations, but really a lot of these people that have done quite well, they all look at it in a way more from a positive lens and a positive perspective, and share a lot of the ideas that I think we share.
Right, right. Well, let's talk a minute about how expensive tennis has become, because you're a coach and, you know, you're out there trying to support your family, coaching kids like mine and, you know, others who have these aspirations. And the parents are, you know, looking at the money going out. And we hear constantly about how college scholarships are tougher and tougher, especially on the boys' side, about how if you're not in the top 100 in the world as a professional, you're not making a living from your tennis. And I think that adds to a lot of the anxiety, a lot of the stress that drives some of this crazy parent behavior out there. And I'm wondering if any of the parents of the kids that you work with have expressed those types of concerns to you. And as a coach, you know, what do you say to parents?
It's a great question. I mean, for sure, that's part of the landscape of coaching right now and training high-performance players. And, you know, the first item I'd bring up is, you know, for all that college talk and the scholarship process, you know, I went up to visit Ohio State this weekend, who they're 4 in the country with a boy I teach, and he's looking there. And, you know, those opportunities are great, but even if you play at a program like that, you're most likely not going to get even 50% athletic scholarship to an opportunity like that. So the first thing I would kind of tell parents, and I don't think I need to tell many of the ones that are going out of the way to listen to a program like this, it would be grades are first and foremost, and you can get much more financial help through great academics than you can through athletics. And that's going to become only more true, particularly in the boys, but I think it'll actually become more true in the girls as well. And then kind of the other thing, maybe the bigger landscape comment would be, you know, it's very hard to look at it as a return on investment. And it's very, well, I should say it's very easy to do that. And you have to fight yourself to not do it and look at it as the dollars that you're investing into the growth of your child. And you know, it's easy for me to say, as I'm not doing that. But, you know, I look at it almost, you know, I'm paying for my 2-year-old now to go to daycare. And, you know, we're paying a couple $1,000s a month almost for that expense. And we look at it like, man, it's pretty much money. And then I think about, you know, as my kid grows older, and if he was going to pick a sport like tennis, you know, there'd be that type of investment per month as well, most likely. So it's just part of the developmental process, and try not to look at it as, man, I've invested $100,000, so he better get a $100,000 scholarship. And I know that's very easy for me to say, but it's kind of hard. And then one final tip would be, find a coach in a program that understands that whole dynamic, and they're not keeping – I think we don't like it when parents keep minute-to-minute score on us. Like, hey, you had an hour private, and that one went 49 minutes. Why is it costing, you know, $100? It should cost, you know, 49/60 of that amount. And I think parents – don't like it either when the coaches keep score. You know, hey, I want to talk to you on the phone after a match, or hey, will you come to the tournament, or hey, can my son or daughter hit in an additional lesson and maybe not get charged So I think when you find a program that looks at it that way, more as a big picture and not as a minute-to-minute proposition, I think it really can be beneficial to both parties.
That's really good advice. All right, we have another caller. I'm going to pull our caller in. Caller, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi.
Is the first original semi-perfect tennis parent. It's Matt's dad.
Love it.
Now, I say semi-perfect, Lisa. I don't know that I do all this stuff he's saying, you know, but I just wanted to call because, number one, you got a great program going on, and I think this is a great, great advice to be sharing with a lot of tennis parents. And having been a tennis parent when Matt was a little junior, you know, I really think that the life lessons part of this is really big. And I know, because I know Matt's program, I mean, he's very intent and focused on that whole part of this, you know, so it's the whole player, not just learning a backhand and so forth and so on. I just want to say that. And then I want to add to that that, you know, I think one of the things that I kind of was happy to see is after reading Matt's book, you know, some of the folks that are really at the top, I mean, guys that coach Federer and, you know, Serena Williams and so on, also believe that you don't want to put undue pressure onto the player. And that's kind of what we believed in coming up. I just wanted to add from a parent's perspective, I saw, and I'm sure Matt remembers, some juniors that were coming up at the same time when Matt was, and really the pressure that the parents put in some cases end up burning the player out of the game. I mean, you know, it was just too much. You know, the player ended up being very talented, but they didn't stick with it. And I don't know, Matt, maybe you can talk a little bit about that. I know the book touches upon that.
Yeah,
that's
thank
a great
you. Oh, that's my dad, and you know, it's great to hear him call in. I thought he might have called. I sent it out earlier to them. And
I think
those are all good points. I think from you know, one thing that my dad did really well is he, and I tell this to tennis parents all the time, you know, I think you have to be hard on the right things. You have to be hard on effort, respect, energy, preparation, you know, showing love for the game, showing fight. Those things, they have to be 10 out of 10 on the hardness scale. There's no exceptions to that. And then from there, you have to be light and recuse yourself on some of the other areas. You know, what was your forehand technique like? What was your backhand technique? You know, getting into strategy.
Yep.
Try, even though you probably have become a little knowledgeable about that, or a lot knowledgeable, as some parents are also coaches, I think the less you can deliver on those topics, the better. And I heard one parent I interviewed who really had a neat perspective on that was the dad of Jeff Morrison, who was the NCAA champ, and he played, I think he was about 80 or 90 in the world. He made the Wimbledon fourth round. He was a friend of ours growing up, and his dad is a very big USTA guy, does a lot of tournaments, really a good guy. And he said, you know, you got to limit that information, even if you know exactly what the information is and you know it like the back of your hand. You need to intentionally not give that information as much as you can and be more of a parent and less of a tennis parent. And I thought that was really an interesting comment from him, kind of side noting off what my dad mentioned there.
You know, I think that's really true, Matt. You know, I just got to say, there was definitely a point, Lisa, as a parent, where I kind of said, hey, you know, I need good professional help to keep taking this on and making it continue to bloom and in a positive way, you know. I mean, when children are very young and they're starting in the game, you know, as a parent, it's really, really valuable to just try to not put the pressure and let them make it fun, you know, for the child. But then there becomes a time, you know, the player keeps getting better and better, you know, and I do think it's important to locate a coach that kind of understands that whole picture. It's sort of the hitchhiking off what you're saying there, Matt. So anyway, it's good to call in.
Thanks for calling. Thanks for taking time out of your day and sharing your experience with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's a great show. We'll talk to you guys later.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Matt, you know, one of the things that I'm finding really interesting now that my son he's 16, but he's playing mostly 18 and under events now, and it's so funny to me to sit at a tournament and watch the parents of the 10 and unders and see how stressed out some of them are and how, you know, you can just see their bodies tense up. You see their faces contort. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And I think, oh, my gosh, did I do that when my kid was in the 10s? And I'm sure I did. I'm sure I did. And I'm mortified at the thought of somebody watching me and just snickering at themselves, you know, or to themselves thinking, that poor woman has no idea what she's in for. But, I mean, you know, as a coach, I just, you know, I wonder how much preparation can you give as a coach to the parents before their kids jump into the whole tournament scene? And do the parents listen? I mean, I wonder if a coach had sat me down when my son was in the 10s, would I have really listened to what he was saying, or would I have kind of poo-pooed it and said, no, I'll be fine out there. I'll be fine out there. Have you had any experience with that?
I tell you what, I mean, that's pretty much my internal thought process as I wrote the book, because really what happens is we find ourselves as coaches educating parents is one of our main areas that we work on. It really is what we do most of. I mean, it takes more of our time, honestly, than the hitting of the balls. And you know, my partner in crime, Brian Schubert, he's our junior director, and he spends so much time calling parents and talking on the phone, and I do as well. And, you know, I think what I thought was, you know, first of all, I want to get a guide, a little book here to hand the parents when the kid is 8 and 9 and 10, because it's not going to save me all those conversations, but it's going to really clean it up a little bit and make it maybe half of the workload. And then secondly, I don't want to be the only one talking and lecturing about it, because that makes it look like, yeah, whatever Matt has to say, yeah, he thinks he knows everything about it. So I think it was kind of cool to include some experts in the field and also parents who have been through it, so they could actually talk to my students kind of through the book. And you know, I think you hit the nail on the head with that one, because I even look back when I was a coach, and, you know, I'm 36 now. I've been coaching since I was a teenager, and I coached a lot of you know, kids that were pretty decent when I was in my early 20s, and I would go to, like, tournaments or state tournament or big national or something, and I'd be, like, way into it and way animated, and then now I'm completely different. And I think it just comes from learning and being, you know, being there a little bit and going through the experiences kind of like you have.
Right. All right. Well, I'm going to take a quick break. We have a commercial. I want to just give out the call-in number in case any of our listeners have a question or a comment, and that number is 714-583-6853. Again, 714-583-6853 if you have a question for me or for our guest today, Matt Dectus, author and coach, who has just published The Perfect Tennis Parent, a guide for parents of competitive junior players. We will be right back.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Welcome back to Parenting Aces on the UR Tennis Network on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Stone. I am the parent of a 16-year-old boy who is making his way through the junior tennis world in hopes of playing college tennis in a couple years, and who knows after that. My guest today is coach and author Matt Dectus, who has just published a book called The Perfect Tennis Parent, A Guide for Parents of Competitive Junior Players. And Matt is talking with us today about what we parents can do to educate ourselves, to position ourselves to actually help our children through their tennis journey as opposed to causing them to slide backwards or be embarrassed by our behavior or worse, I guess. So if you have any questions or any comments you'd like to share with us, the call-in number is 714-583-6853. Again, 714-583-6853. 6853, and we do have another caller on the line. So, caller, are you there?
I am.
Hello?
Here.
Oh, great.
Hi, Lisa. Hi, Matt.
Hi.
John Williams.
Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Matt, talk to Lisa, and also, you know, talk to, you know, the audience about, you know, how you deal with parents that, that at times, you know, may want to get too involved into the coaching of their children, even though they have essentially turned that child over to you and to your staff. Obviously, tennis is one of those games that an awful lot of the children that are playing, you know, their parents have played to a degree, and, you know, they may have their own thoughts on strokes and techniques, and that obviously must make it very hard on you and your staff to you know, to do what you think is right, and then you're getting whispers or maybe a little bit more than that in your ear from the actual parents. So just kind of chat a little bit about how you would, you know, how you deal with that.
That's a great question. I mean, I think first off, there's no one way to develop a player. And I think, you know, we talk a lot about the player-parent-coach triangle. You need to have that player at the top and then the parent and the coach at the bottom, and they're equally as important, and I would argue that the parent is more important. So I'd start with that. But then I think, you know, different coaches have different philosophies. I'm big on, if you want to be a great coach, one of the first things you have to do is control your environment. And controlling your environment means your environment that you have when the kid is with you, and I think a little bit when the kid is not with you. And that's a little bit over the top, I think, of a concept or an approach, but I think that that works best, particularly when the kid is maybe like 8 to 14 or even younger, 6 to 14. So I'm really big on trying to help control the additional hitting, the additional court time, the additional messages that the player is receiving. Some coaches are a little more like, hey, whatever, I don't need to control the environment so much. I can kind of, you know, I don't care if there's a couple coaches giving a point or two to the kid or whatever. So I think to summarize that kind of concept, I think when you're young, it's probably more important to have one message in the kid's ear. And that includes maybe the parent trying to hold back a little bit of the coaching, even if they are pretty aware, which I know a lot of parents are because, like you said, a lot of parents that played encourage their kids to play. And then I think as they get older, I think that environment can loosen a little bit and not necessarily be quite as controlled. And that, to me personally, that's the time to bring in a little extra hitting. Maybe the parent hits in more and talks, you know, shop a little more, et cetera. What I really don't like is when the kid's 8 or 9 or 10 and they're getting, you know, a million different messages from a parent, a coach, another coach, et cetera. So those are a couple of thoughts from my perspective. Lisa, I don't know if you have ran across that in your parenting with your boy or not.
Well, absolutely. And it's one of those hard lessons that I've had to learn as a parent. I grew up playing tennis, not anywhere near the level that my son is at. But, you know, I quote, knew a lot going into this whole tennis gig. And, you know, I felt very free to supplement the information that he was getting from his coach, which was a huge mistake on my part. And, you know, but it was a trust issue. You know, I didn't have the faith that the coach was doing everything that needed to be done. And instead of asking the hard questions and maybe looking at a different coaching situation that I would feel more comfortable with as the parent, I butted in and butted in way too much. And I think it was very unhealthy. And not until we got into a different coaching situation did I feel like I could back away and really have the trust in the coach to handle the types of things that you just mentioned, Matt. So I would advise parents to definitely go Matt's way, not mine, because I think mine was very harmful and you know, provided for a lot of conflict that was really could have been avoided very easily had I kept my big mouth shut. But you know, it's hard.
I love that
it's
trust
hard.
Idea. And then I think the only thing I would add to that is, you know, in that triangle with the parent there and the coach on the bottom two corners, you know, there is so much to be done parenting that I feel like if you're really attacking those concepts, you're going to have your hands full already. You don't need to talk about backhands cross court and, you know, are that we're using the correct patterns in the match. I mean, those things are, to me, in the scheme of things, easier. What I really need from parents is, you know, are you working with your child on emotional stability? Are you building their confidence? Are you helping them know how to prepare? Are you helping them know how to go about their business? Are you valuing practice as much or more than a match? You know, but I think those concepts are gigantic, and they're honestly way harder and way more important, in my opinion, than, you know, a swing plane of a forehand concept. So I think to me, those things are absolutely necessary and more important than what I can do as a coach. And I think without that pillar of the parent being very strong, the kid doesn't have as good of a chance to be great.
John,
thank you
so much for calling in. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, John.
Bye-bye. Matt, we have another caller, too, so I'm going to go ahead and let them come on through. Caller, are you there?
Hi, Lisa. It's Mike calling from Ohio. How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. I appreciate you having Matt on. Seems like he's fairly informative. My question to you is, you know, I think I'm a pretty good parent for my daughter. My daughter's 10, but she's my oldest of four, and I really struggle with trying to find the right coach. I think I have a good coach now, but I spent a lot of time and money going through maybe three or four different coaches trying to find the right one. Now, I see somebody like Rick Macy on the Tennis Channel, and he seems you can get an idea for what his philosophies are. But how do you – my question to Matt is, how do you find the perfect tennis coach without going through a lot of trial and error? And what are some of the questions I should be asking or listeners should be listening when they're searching for a good tennis coach? Some questions you should be asking that to find out if that coach is right for your son or daughter. Does that make sense?
Hey,
that's a great question.
You want me to
hey,
take
Matt,
that,
can
Lisa,
I jump
or do
in?
You want to take it?
Well, I was going to say, so if I can jump in real quick, and then I'm going to turn it over to you, Matt. But I just want to say I'm going to do a little shameless self-promoting. But I wrote a series of articles on how to choose a coach on parentingaces.com. And so I would just suggest if you have a few minutes to maybe go on the website and dig up those articles, because I think they will address some of your questions. But, Matt, now you can jump in and answer them more directly.
No, I think that's great. And, you know, Mike, that's good. You went down to Rick. Did you go down to Rick Macy? Because he's great. He's a friend of the program. Did you head down there?
Yeah, actually, I saw him on TV, and I decided to go down there. And I saw he was mentioning your book as well, and I enjoyed what you had to say about him and his perfect tennis parent, and so I thought I'd go down and visit him. He spoke very highly of you and the work you do up in, where are you,
Cincinnati.
Five seasons?
Yeah.
Cincinnati, okay. Yeah, he spoke
thanks,
very highly.
Thanks, Mike. Well, yeah, I think, you know, you put together, I think you want to have about 10 or 12 questions for the coach, and really, you know, back to what Lisa was talking about earlier, you want to find a trust type of relationship where you can just kind of I personally like the concept of turning the kid kind of to the coach saying, hey, do what you do and let's communicate about it every periodically. And but hey, you have the keys to the car, and before you turn those keys over, you got to make sure you agree with philosophical things. You know, for example, we're very much about the process here versus the results. We're not a real like result oriented program. We're not throwing parades after a kid wins a local level six tournament, and we're not yelling at the kid when they lose a back draw match. You know, so some programs are a little more, hey, you know, you won a tournament, let's have a pizza party every time, and that would be a different philosophy than what we roll with here. Other things are some coaches use a drill sergeant approach, a very tough approach. Others are more conversational use more of a case-by-case approach and not always one way. I think asking those kind of questions, what's your philosophy on coaching? Another example would be at our club we use a team concept where Brian, the main coach, and I, we share a lot of students where we cross-teach and we go off one developmental plan, but we work together with that family and that kid. And I may teach a private to the kid, and he may as well, where I know at some clubs, and I've been in these situations too, where maybe the staff doesn't work quite like that. They're a little more, hey, it's my kid or your kid type thing. So I think those are all important questions that you might want to have with the coach. And then maybe also, hey, what's your background? How many kids have you developed that have goals similar to my kid? Is that what you do, and is that what you're going to continue to do? It looks like you're on the right track, Mike. And then I think, then once you get the great coach, that coaching system, just leave the coaching to the coach and let them do what they do.
I appreciate that. Your 30 years of coaching, that I can see your wisdom coming through there. And Lisa, I'll be sure to look up those articles on parentaces.com.
Parenting Aces. Parenting Aces.
Thank you. Parenting
Yes. All right.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks so much for calling, Mike.
God bless.
Thanks. And Matt, we have another caller. So you're a popular dude today. So hang on one second. I'm going to pull
that. I think
I
paid off a
in.
Few people. I don't know about that Mike guy there, but a few of the other people, I told them to call, and they're going to expect payment or something. Just kidding.
Caller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hi, Lisa. This is
Hi.
Sandra calling in. How
hey,
are you?
Hey, Sandra. How are you?
Good. Just in comment to the last caller, I know we all look for the perfect tennis coach, and there's probably not a perfect tennis coach, just like there's not a perfect parent. I think one of the most important things we have to always remember when we're looking for the coach is to let your kids help you make the decision. Sometimes it's more important what the child thinks of the coach than what the parent does. I have three kids, and I have three coaches, just because each child has such a different learning style, but the same coach hasn't worked with the next child. I have one that's drill sergeant, but my first one would do nothing but work with one of those type coaches, and the next one couldn't function with that type of coach. So I think it's really important for us to make sure we listen to our kids and that they're enjoying the coaching as much as who we think the best coach is.
I love that point. It's really a good one. I think the best coaches are the ones that are trying to be able to modify their style to the kid. But even as much as you try that, there might not be that natural, connection or way that the kid enjoys to receive the coaching. We just had a parent, actually just left here about an hour ago, from Ann Arbor, come down and talk to me about their kids coming on a train. And it was great. She had the kids actually interview me one by one. She had a boy and a girl, and they were 12 and 13, and she had them ask me questions by themselves. And that was really cool. I thought that was pretty different.
Yeah, and the other one is when you have multiple children playing tennis, sometimes there's a discrepancy in the level that the kids play at. And I know we've had the issue with the one child being a super overachiever, and the next one, it's really hard for him to live in the shadow of his brother. So it was easier for him not to go to the same coach as his older brother. So it was one less thing he had to try to prove and be the same at. So just always keeping your kids' self-esteem and their confidence, I think, is probably one of the most important things in choosing your tennis coach.
Sandra, thank you so much for calling in. And those
You're
were
welcome.
Fantastic, fantastic points. And just because a coach is great with your child when they're 8 or 9 doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be the right coach when they're 15, 16. So Even though you may have done due diligence at the younger age, it doesn't mean that the job is finished. And I would encourage, you know, the parents to keep a close eye on things, not hover and not be, you know, one of those helicoptery parents, but just, you know, listen to your kid. Listen to the subtle messages that they're bringing home after practice or after a lesson. And, you know, sometimes there's some hidden messages or not so hidden messages in what they're saying or their body language or even their enthusiasm or reluctance to be on the tennis court. And some of that may have to do with who they're working with as their coach. For my kid, you know, he was with the same coach for 5 years, and then we made a change as he was entering the 16s, and it was the right decision for us. And yes, his old coach did a great job with him, but I think it was time for a change for a lot of reasons. And so I think as parents, we have to be tuned into that. But the flip side of that, and Matt, maybe you can talk to this a little bit too, is the kids who are switching coaches week by week, it seems. I mean, in Atlanta at least, there's so many choices that a lot of kids are jumping ship after a very short time. So, you know, maybe a point you can talk to, Matt, is how long do you give a situation before you determine that it's not the right one?
That's a great great comment. And, you know, Cincinnati is a little different. We're different than Atlanta, Chicago. I feel like there aren't a lot of clubs that are just putting out high-performance juniors, and we do it probably more than any of the clubs. So it's a little easier for us to have that that longevity here. But, you know, even here there's competition, and I think Atlanta would obviously be one of those markets where it's really competitive. The thing I'll mention is I think from a coach's perspective, at least I think the better coaches, I know one of the reasons I teach is because I like that opportunity to create a lifelong relationship. And, you know, I've been coaching here for about, 15, 20 years, and I feel like, I have probably 20, 30 long-term relationships where the kids are getting out now. They're either, going into the work world or medical school or graduating college, and I'm still communicating with them and spending time with them, maybe going to some of their weddings or so on and so forth. That's really cool for me, and I think a lot of great coaches will tell you that. And I think my personal opinion is I think those types of relationships are ones that are going to really have the best interest for your kid in mind, and not the dollar-for-dollar proposition, and not looking at it just for the accolades or the ego or whatever. So I think that would be kind of my baseline for where to start. And then I think you do have to examine it and look at your relationship, but I think the more you have open communication with developmental plans and regular meetings, maybe a couple per year, I think you probably will be able to continue to grow with that coach if they've coached all the way from from 5 years old to college level or pro level. If you have coaches that have done that, if that is your coach, then you might be able to go all the way. And if not, if the coach has a little more of a narrow niche, then maybe it might be better to go to a different coach.
Well, along the lines of that, and getting back to the perfect tennis parent concept, can you talk a little bit about how much of a personal relationship the parents and the kid, the player, should have with the coach off the tennis court? Because that's always kind of a tricky line to kind of figure out where you are on it.
I agree. That's another great one. I interviewed Mark Bay, who's on the Tennis Channel a little bit. He works with the Bryan brothers a little bit, and he had this quote: "Hey, the parent and the coach don't have to be drinking buddies, but they have to be like friends. They have to get along and be on the same team." And I think that's where I would begin the conversation. And I think the more they can be close, I think it helps the player. So I would recommend being as good of friends you can with a coach, because I think they're a very important role model in your child's life. And I think they're probably, after the parent, you could argue maybe one of the biggest role models, since they're going to have them maybe even longer than a teacher at school would have them. And these players like your son, they're playing with that coach probably almost every day during the week. So I would encourage becoming better friends with the coach rather than being just kind of tennis only type of thing.
I know it's a tough one to kind of navigate, and especially when you're starting a new coaching relationship for your child, and you know you're trying to feel out what your place is as the parent. And I know some coaches welcome parents to sit and watch as long as they keep their mouth shut. Other coaches prefer that you drop your child and pick them up at the end of their tennis time. And so I think, you know, that's another one of those questions that when you're looking for a coach for your child, that it's really important to ask, you know, what's the environment like here? Do you want the parents hanging out? Do you not want us hanging out? What are you trying to accomplish in terms of parental involvement? And then as a parent, making sure you honor and respect that. And again, that's another one of those things that I did really badly at early on and learned a lesson, and hopefully I think I've gotten better.
That's a great point. You know, I think we talk about a lot as coaches. You know, I think when I began, I didn't really want an involved parent. I wanted a parent just to get out of there and just kind of, you know, just work with the kid. And now I kind of require an involved parent. I really need an involved parent, because if I don't have an involved parent, you know, the kid can't learn all those lessons that we're talking about. And then also the scheduling and the driving and the commitment required, as you know, Lisa, is tremendous. So I think that's really important to have an involved parent, and you know, what does that involvement mean? That's what you can discuss with your coach.
Yeah, great point. Let me just give out the call-in number again. We're winding down on our time, so I want to make sure that if anyone has a question, you know you can call in 714-583-6853. Again, 714-583-6853. If you'd like to call in and chat with Matt Dektus, who has just published a new book, The Perfect Tennis Parent, or if you just want to share your experience parenting your tennis player and how you have chosen a coach and the type of interaction you have with the coach. And Matt, the information you're sharing with us today, honestly, it's just so valuable. And you know, as the parent who really tries to walk that fine line, you know, sometimes I have questions that I'm a bit hesitant to ask of my son's coach, and just because I don't want to bug him or I don't want to seem like I'm poking my nose in where it doesn't belong. Though I have to say, his coach is very responsive and pretty patient with me, which is a tall order. I will point out.
You know, that's intimidating to have a parent who also is, you know, becoming a parent, a tennis parenting expert like you. So it's, he or she might be like, whoa, you know, she knows a lot about it. I better call her back quickly.
No, he's good. He's really good. And it helps that he has a psychology background. So that has been very valuable for my son, who sometimes lets his head get in his way. So it's been a very healthy relationship. But, you know, again, I mean, there are questions that, you know, I may think about, and then I think, oh, you know, I don't know that he really wants me poking my nose in there. So to have you here and be able to have access to the answers of some of these questions is really great. So thank you for taking the time. I want to just give you the opportunity to plug your book a little bit while we have a lull in terms of callers. So tell us where we can buy your book and how we can go about reading it ourselves and becoming closer to the perfect tennis parent.
Great. My book's available at www.perfecttennisparent.com. And it should be up on Amazon here in a week or two. We're working on that, and this is the first time I put a book out, so we're getting through that process, but it should be complete pretty soon here. Also, you can follow us on Facebook as well. So anyway, that's kind of how you get it, and I think the cost is $19.95, so you can do all that online at the website, and yeah.
That's great. And we'll have a link up on parentingaces.com as well. So I'll add a link to your book's website. So if people want to purchase it that way, they can also get to you through us. But so what's next on the horizon? You've written this book. You now have a two-year-old at home. So are you going to take your own advice and become the perfect tennis parent yourself, or are you going to steer your son way clear of the tennis world and learn how to be the perfect basketball dad or orchestra dad or something?
You know, I think a lot of the skills kind of carry over, so hopefully I'm working on them and getting better at them through coaching. And, you know, I think we'll see where he takes it. He's going to be around the club a lot. And hopefully he has a little bit of athleticism. His mom is a doctor, so we're proud that he's probably going to have her brains and not mine. And hopefully he has a little bit of athletic ability to boot as well.
That would be awesome. It sounds like a pretty lethal combination, actually.
Sometimes you never know, right? So we'll see how he turns
right.
out.
Absolutely.
First,
we've
got to get him sleeping in his own bed and not coming to mommy and daddy's bed every night, and we'll be okay.
There'll come a time where you'll miss that, believe me. Oh, gosh, they're so sweet when they're two, until it's 3 a.m, then they're not so sweet. are you planning to write another book? Are you just sticking with the coaching? Where do you see this book leading you as a coach and as a parent?
You know, as a career, I've had a chance to do a lot of things that I've really wanted to do, and I'm in a place where I feel like I belong, and I think this book that I wrote is a nice supplement to that, and kind of a good thing for our program and our philosophy and what we do and what we try to teach. And professionally, you know, that's probably enough to fulfill me. My personal wishes are more, you know, I really enjoy training and teaching the kids, and particularly the younger ones, to kind of get them to grow up and get them through and get them to their goals. And so I don't really have too much more on the horizon for that as far as what I'm my ambition is, you know, going to take me towards. But, yeah, as a parent, I got a long road ahead, and we'll – that's probably going to be more of my time over the next, 10 or 20 years. And hopefully my wife doesn't work too much in the hospital, and we can spend a lot of that time together.
That sounds great. So before we sign off, we've got about 2.5 minutes left on the air. What if you could give parents one piece of advice? What would it be?
I think it would be, just continue getting better, and know that no one has all the right answers. No parents have all the right answers. No coaches have all the right answers. But the best thing you can do is just continue to educate and become better. And I think not only own that message, but own it as it relates to your junior player too, and try to teach them, hey, your job is to get better out there. It's not relative to anyone or anybody or any tournament or anything like that. It's just about you getting better every day, and I'm going to model that as a parent, and I want you to model it as a player. And I think if you can go with that process-oriented mind, it'll really help you as a sports parent.
It's so true, and it's so hard as a parent to not get caught up in the results. And I think, if we can all remind ourselves and remind each other that it is about the journey and not about the little bitty achievements along the way, but really about the long-term growth of our children as human beings first and tennis players way second, that we can maintain a little bit more of our sanity through this process, which I'm here to tell you is really tough. And I watch a lot of professional tennis on TV, and every time they flash to the parents in the stands and you see those tense bodies and those contorted faces, I just think, oh, my God, how many more years am I going to be doing this? And, is this really, really the right path for us to be on? But then when you see your child reach the next level in terms of whether it's, all of a sudden they've learned how to hit a drop shot, or they've figured out tactically what to do in a match, or they've adopted a better eating schedule just on their own. I mean, those little things are so rewarding as the parent to see. So find joy in that, find satisfaction in that, and hopefully we can all continue on that journey to be the perfect tennis parent. Matt, thank you again so much for being on with us today and sharing your knowledge and sharing your experience. See you guys next week.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Goodbye.